final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
The preacher man says it's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a gold dry. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see, a woman and the kids and the dogs and me. I got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch catfish from dusk till dawn. Make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't too many things these old boys can't do. We grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Because you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Those women moan, boys raised on shotguns. We say grace and we say ma'am. If you ain't into that, we don't give a damn. We came from the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the western skies. We can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. My grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures of the Broadway nights, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beach nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. North California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land.
can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
Thank you. six, five, four, three, two, one, zero. Blast off!
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
In the early 1940s, Sir Harry Ricardo, an industry pioneer who focused on high-speed aircraft engines, was the first to inject water into an internal combustion engine. At the time, aircraft engines were boosted with both turbochargers and superchargers in an attempt to squeeze out as much power as possible. However, the high boost pressures and temperatures resulted in pre-detonation of the fuel, which led to numerous problems. And attempts to control the pre-ignition by increasing the fuel-to-air ratio had only limited success.
Ricardo experimented with injecting water into the intake of the engine. He discovered that the water would cool the air going through the boosters, which prevented any pre-detonation from occurring. This enabled the boosters with the cooler, denser air to be much more effective, and as a result, there was a significant increase in power levels.
Today, water injection is used in high-performance engines, which are equipped with turbochargers or superchargers. Water is injected into the inlets of the turbocharger or supercharger to control pre-detonation of the fuel. And while today's controls are more sophisticated, the basic design remains the same. Recent studies include the injection of water downstream of the turbo or superchargers, direct injection into the combustion process, and studies on homogeneous charge compression ignition, HCCI, engines, using water injection as a method to control ignition timing.
For diesel engines, water injection has been studied extensively for reducing both soot and NOx emissions.
These studies have included port injection, direct injection, and emulsification of water in the fuel itself. While all of these methods have advantages and disadvantages, each has shown promise in reducing emissions.
The Scuderi Air Hybrid has a built-in supercharger on the compression side of the engine, and it was only logical to investigate the effects of water injection.
In a conventional engine, a turbocharger or supercharger is added to the intake of the engine. However, we supercharge the combustion process simply by increasing the diameter of the compression cylinder, forcing more air into the combustion cylinder, enabling the utilization of a larger charge of fuel.
Since there's no fuel in the compression side of our engine, we're not looking to control pre-detonation or knock. Instead, the cooling effect of the water reduces the compression work on the engine and also increases the mass flow through the engine. This results in not only an increase in power like a conventional supercharger, but we also see an increase in the efficiency of the engine.
Using GT Power, a special software for engine development, we studied the effect of introducing water downstream of the internal supercharger, which in the Scuderi Air Hybrid means the injection of water into the crossover passage.
Water had little or no effect on the performance of our engine, but it did drop the temperature and pressure, and it reduced the mass airflow into our power cylinder. However, injecting steam into the crossover passage had a positive effect on both power and efficiency. Temperature and pressure remained high while the mass airflow into the power cylinder increased. Steam injection into the crossover passage may prove beneficial for energy recovery techniques that produce steam from the exhaust of the engine.
In early engine design, water injection was used to internally cool the engine. These days, the primary intent of direct water injection into the combustion process is to reduce emissions and control pre-detonation. Studies have shown little or no gain in both power and efficiency. Naturally, the current state of energy prices and the dependency on foreign oil has intensified efforts to extract more energy from internal combustion engines. One of the most promising methods, the recovery of energy from engine exhaust.
The typical internal combustion engine is 33% efficient. That means two-thirds of the fuel energy is lost as heat, either through the cooling system or through the exhaust gases. Heat recovery is typically achieved through the addition of a Rankine or steam cycle. The combination of a Rankine cycle with a conventional Otto cycle constitutes a combined cycle engine.
Exhaust heat is used to generate high pressurized steam, which is then used to drive an expander, typically a piston device. The work generated by the expander is utilized to supplement the power generated by the engine.
The attractive feature here is the potential for large gains in both efficiency and power. The problem with combined cycle systems is their cost, size, and complexity. They require high efficiency heat exchangers, compact expanders and condensers, and controls that can meet the loads and speeds of the engine. Such is the case with combined cycle systems designed by major manufacturers.
Key features of the Scuderi engine appear to make it better suited for combined cycle operation. And thanks to its unique split cycle design, which fires after top dead center, the Scuderi Air Hybrid won't require additional equipment.
In preliminary investigations, water injection into our power cylinder showed significant promise. This was done late in the combustion process to prevent the water from interfering with combustion. The water absorbed heat from the hot gases in the cylinder, producing steam and increasing pressure. The result, a significant increase of almost 20% in both power and efficiency. We believe even larger gains are possible. In fact, gains from the compression side should enhance the gains from the power side.
Other Scuderi features also favor a combined cycle design. Since our power cylinder does not have a cooling stroke, temperatures in the cylinder always remain high. Our combustion process is very fast, releasing all of its energy in a relatively short portion of the stroke. The power cylinder can be made longer than the compression cylinder, providing more time for steam to expand. These studies were preliminary, and further work needs to be completed for this design. However, these gains in power and efficiency are substantial, and the simplicity of the Scuderi Air Hybrid provides the best path forward to develop an effective Otto Rankin combined cycle engine.
Crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
Yeah, don't learn electrical safety by accident and give me the number for 911. I say the people of the auto industry are a bunch of rank amateurs or a bunch of... Never mind. You're listening to Shaziz Radio at www.shazizradio.com. If you want to join in on the chat, jump over there to the superchat.html. That podcast that I played right there is related to two or three videos that I posted in the chat room over there at the Super Chat Room. And essentially it talked about water injection in the engines. So, Raymond Thomas, you guys around? Yeah, no? Hello?
Hello?
Microphone check. Sounds like you're in the back hallway. Is Raymond around?
No, he's not here.
No, he's not here. All right. Well, come closer to your microphone. It's got that squeaky chair. Anyway, so while we get that all sorted, so basically you heard in that podcast where they talked about back in 1940s they used to inject water into the cylinders on airplane engines. Well, also they used to inject water into cylinders on tractors to get a better fuel efficiency out of it. So I'm sitting here and I'm thinking about this whole process and listening to some of the things that they're saying about how, you know, the water had a cooling effect. We used it one way, and then they found out that by putting steam into it, they could get it to go better. I know the auto industry can't be that stupid to understand the basic science of water, hydrogen and oxygen, two parts hydrogen, one part oxygen. You already have a perfect fuel right there. Now, if the auto industry can't figure out how to literally engineer the simple concept of an engine that would run off of straight water, then they need to just pack it in and go home or something, because they're just a bunch of rank amateurs, bunch of shade tree mechanics. That's what I'm saying. So all you folks over there at General Motors and Ford and Toyota and Nissan and all that, y'all can't figure it out. You're all a bunch of amateurs. Bunch of hacks. Because if it's back in 1940 when they were injecting water into cylinders and you ain't got it figured out by now, it's ironic because you talk about burning water in an internal combustion engine, you'll hear a lot of people say, oh, you don't want to do that, you're going to cause a vapor locker, or you're going to cause it, burn this up or that up. Well, if you're burning this or that up, then that has to tell you something there, that water is pretty destructive force down inside that cylinder, because you're not using it properly. So if you strictly engineered this vehicle from start to finish to run on water, then you would have all that sorted out all the way through the whole deal. See, it's blatantly obvious that water is going to have a cooling effect if you put it in the normal injector style, like you see you know, your fuel going into there, your gasoline, or even your diesel for that matter. But one of the things was also mentioned was combustion ignition, you know, or compression ignition, where you don't even have to have a spark to ignite the fuel. All you have to do is have the temperature up there, right, and any fuel will ignite under pressure. So that's how a diesel engine's been working for quite some time. You take a glow plug, you heat the glow plug up, it preheats the cylinder, and then you inject a fine mist of diesel fuel in there, and between the compression and the heat inside that cylinder, it combusts. So, all this talk about trying to get better fuel economy and better... doggone it, somebody trying to call me right now. All this talk about trying to get better fuel economy. Hey, Thomas, can you add Justin to that call? All this talk about better fuel economy and all this kind of craziness. You could have done had it a long time ago. But that's why I say that the average Joe's actually going to have to come together and basically build these machines ourselves and make them function the way we want them to. Because you're not going to get it through industry. For some reason, they like to play dumb when it comes around to talking about water injection systems. Now, they're out there using these in race cars, man. They're building high-performance engines to get... to reduce any kind of pre-ignition because of all the different portions in the engine that might get hot. You know, when you're running a turbo on a car, essentially you're using the exhaust fumes off of the car to run the turbine that actually uses the opposite side of the turbine on the other side of the turbo to draw air in from the atmosphere and compress it. It compresses that air and gets it real hot. So then that air is then thrust through an intercooler, which cools the air temperature down again to some extent so that it's ready to go inside the intake of your manifold. What they aren't saying that is in the process of doing that, you're actually sucking in some moisture from the atmosphere and injecting that into the water, into the cylinder. So you're actually using water from the atmosphere through a turbo system, which gives you more horsepower. Also, they had mentioned that you could recapture some of the exhaust and be able to reburn that exhaust. Well, that's already been a done deal because I got a catalytic converter on the doggone thing that's a reburner of waste fuel, and off the side of that catalytic converter you'll see a port that goes out and then works its way back around to the intake, so you're actually burning some of those fumes off. Well, I submit that if you really wanted to, you could burn every doggone bit of the exhaust off without causing any stoppage or, you know, messing with the back pressure necessary to keep that engine running the way you want it to run. So, I get a bit frustrated on the side whenever I listen to these people talk about the way that they want to engineer engines. You can watch a couple of these videos and watch what's going on in there. They actually have direct injection systems designed to inject water right straight into the cylinder, mixed with either methanol or gasoline, and they get a really good burn. You know, at some level, since water won't compress, when you got a high compression inside that cylinder, all the other gases inside there get squeezed really hard because the water doesn't want to compress. Now, if you send it out there in a really fine vapor, then you're not worried about the water compressing. All you're doing from that point on is using the heat to crack the water, and you're using the temperature to ignite it to cause the combustion cycle. So, right now, we have every single bit of science necessary to literally design an internal combustion engine that will run off of pure water. And I mean, with no additives, no craziness involved, absolutely no gasoline necessary. If you want to put alcohol in there, that's just, actually, as far as I'm concerned, it's just a waste. But, you know, hey, alcohol burns pretty cleanly, so you really wouldn't have to worry about any pollutions on that. So it looks like Justin joined us. We're live on air there. Justin, how's it going?
Good, you son.
Oh, pretty good. So what do you think about what I'm talking about, man?
Try not to think. It gets me into trouble.
Oh. Well.
But, there's all kinds of ways of doing things, right? It's just actually getting there and doing them.
Well, the whole concept in the auto industry was to try to get reduced emissions, reduced carbon emissions. Well, I'm sitting here explaining exactly in graphic detail how you could literally build an engine that would not have any carbon emissions. So that's solving the problem that they said that they required fixing. And so with that said, to back up what I've been saying all along, I've posted these videos in there about water injection into the internal combustion engine. Now, the way that they're going about it is they're trying to mix a couple different things going on at the same time in order to try to control pre-ignition in there, which if anybody's ever heard the pinging and the knocking in their car, that's pretty much what you don't want to happen, because it really will cause some damage inside your engine and mess it up. So if your engine's getting too hot in sections and your gas is popping before it's time, then you don't want that to happen. Backfiring or, you know, pinging in the motor and all that kind of stuff from your air-fuel mixture being wrong or your timing being off. And if anything's off in that engine because of the way that they're designed, you got something banging when it shouldn't be, if you understand what I'm saying. So, anyway, we also got Thomas in here. Thomas, did you get your close to your microphone yet, brother?
I don't think Thomas is here.
He was. Yeah, he's at Raymond's house.
I see.
Yeah. It's Raymond that's not here. I don't know where Raymond went. So, anyway, the deal is we're talking about alternative energy. We're talking about trying to find clean, renewable alternative energy sources. And so with that said, the solution's sitting on the table. We need to gather some folks together and build this engine and make it happen. It's as simple as that. So anybody out there in radio land or the world's got a doggone machine shop, all you got to do is try it. Get you a block of aluminum, mill you out a cylinder, or go out and buy you a pre-made cylinder and a piston. There's all kinds of different materials that you could use for pistons. I mean, titanium pistons and aluminum pistons, and I even seen brass pistons. Yeah, there's a lot of model engines out there you should take a look at sometime. Have any of you ever heard of a flame licker motor? No?
No.
Man, you guys are bad for radio. Alright. Anyway, I posted a video link in there of a motor that they call a flame licker motor. Let's see, I think I posted it on the Shaziz radio side. Yeah, there it is. Essentially, they got like, I think it's butane that they're using on the outside of this engine, and it has basically an intake port, whereas the flame is burning on the outside. It's grabbing the fumes off the flame, and that is the fuel for the engine. So, basically, that engine works off of vaporized fuel. It works off of fumes. And if you actually watch this engine run, it's pretty neat how they do it. But, you know, it's obvious that you really don't want, like, open flames on the outside of your engine. But it just proves a concept. You can run that thing off of gas fumes, because that's exactly what's going on right there. Gas fumes and a little bit of moisture in from the atmosphere, and now you got fuel inside there. So that engine, as cool as it is probably really super inefficient, because you're burning all that fuel for unnecessary reasons. So you could take that same flame licker engine and build a essentially a vaporizer system that would vaporize that fuel and basically run the same doggone engine for just a fraction of what it would have cost to run it otherwise. So, it's not that we don't have the technology, it's not that it couldn't be properly engineered, it's just for some reason or another, these folks want to try to go around the bush in order to get to where they need to go. They want to take the hard way. And I'm sitting here, I'm thinking about this whole deal. Give me access to a machine shop and some people that can run some equipment and we'll build a real engine for them and then show them how to do it. See, it surprises me that the mainstream auto industry can't get their act together when it comes down to something that should have been resolved a long time ago.
Why would they resolve it when they're profitizing off of it?
Well,
right? That's the whole thing. It's not that the world doesn't want to change because people live in vanity. Everybody's living in vanity. That's the honest God truth. The majority hasn't, what we would say, is awakened yet, right? There's a small majority that sees things differently and wants to do things differently, right?
Well, how many years?
And especially now with the millennials, right? I'm considered a millennial. I was born in 1980 to 2002. Is, the newer generation, right? Then you have Generation Z and Alpha, and then who knows if we're going to still be alive, humankind, right?
Well, how many years has it been since this whole time when they start talking about how we need to get energy independent and clean, renewable, alternative energy? How many years do you think it's been?
It's been many years. And for the listeners out there, I'd like them to acknowledge what's going on here in Ontario, Canada, right? Nikola Tesla built not one, but two generating stations, one on the American side and one on the Canadian side, in southern Ontario, and I guess it would be northern Buffalo, and the American side. And we, as Canada, sold it all to the American side, and then now we have the biggest windmill farm in all of North America, and we pay the highest hydro rate in all of Canada. We have the biggest generating stations right here in Ontario and all of the windmills here in Ontario, and we pay the highest rate for hydro.
Yeah, that's crazy.
So it's a monopolized system, right? Period. Ever.
Yeah. Well, at some point, the average Joe's going to have to wake up to the reality that these guys are playing you like a banjo, because if you... Look, you got people that are getting fined for trying to run windmills. You got people that are getting fined for trying to you run solar. You got people who are getting fined and possibly even jailed for collecting rainwater. And so the hypocrisy that I hear coming up out of the government... That's why I get upset. You know, these folks, they want their tax money, and they want to try to keep themselves in office and get reelected all the time, saying, when I get in office, I'm going to bankrupt the oil industry and the coal industry, and I'm going to get us clean, renewable, alternative energy. And then, by God, 8 years later, after the jive turkey's up out of office, you still ain't got it. And you won't get it. There ain't no way in Sam Harry Hick they're going to let you folks out there go without paying electric bill or taxes or any of this stuff, or put new technology down on the table. And when I say new technology, I'm kind of being, what's the word I'm looking for? Is it facetious or what? Doggone it. What kind of word? There's another word. Sarcastic. That's a good one. I'm kind of being sarcastic, because the technology that I just talked about water injection, that's not new technology. And it's not even rocket science. It's not even high tech. It was doing that back in the 40s, man. And when the aircraft industry realized that they could do this process, the farmers got wind of it because there were crop dusters out there and stuff like that, and they needed to save some money on fuel, and they started trying it in their tractors. There were people running them in cars, you know, little rat rods and stuff, to give themselves a boost. So the technology's been around for a long time. And if you're paying that kind of prices in your neighborhood for, and after having all that equipment already readily available as in your infrastructure or whatever, then you're just getting ripped off. That's all there is to it. It's just flat out theft. I mean, like a hydroelectric dam, prime example. How many years does it take to pay for that dam? Now, I could understand you got to pay somebody to maintain it every now and then, that kind of stuff, or even 24 hours, you know, watching it and making sure pressures and all that's right. But nonetheless, how much money does it really cost to maintain that dam? You see what I mean? As far as employee-wise and repairs and stuff?
Well, it's not like the bearings get hot or anything. They're just turbines.
Yeah.
Well, the only way the system becomes a failure is if they have too much load up, too much resistance on it, right?
Yeah.
And Nikola Tesla himself said that it was only, those generators would only be there for so long anyways. And they were built around the same time that other dam was built, no?
Well, look how long they've been there now.
That dam in Cali was designed so well that there's no way it would have broke. That was purposely done.
Well, that don't surprise me in the least.
They got a green line, a yellow line, and a red line. A lot of levels at the green line, you're okay. Yellow line, watch out. Red line, pull the plug. They own and they can pull the plug in that bathtub at any time they want.
Yeah.
To relieve pressure. So somebody was not, what were they doing? Roasting marshmallows, sleeping? Well, they purposely allowed that. That's millions and millions and millions and millions and millions of gallons for even an inch to go up on that. There's so much volume there.
Well, not only that, they could have told everybody, hey, go out and water your lawns and fill up your swimming pools and take away some of this water. You know, they could have done that. That's not beyond the realms of possibility, and they could have pumped water down in other places where they, you know, could have released the level or whatever. But, you know, it's just, in my mind, it's just ludicrous that, like, for example, during the drought, the supposed drought over there in California, they're standing next to the ocean and they're talking about there's a drought. They're gonna die of thirst. They can't water the lawn. There was actually people that went and pulled up their grass and put down like rocks or something like that and changed their lawn to like gravel. What in the heck for, man? You're like right next to the doggone ocean, and you ain't never gonna run out of water. The people over in Dubai seem to have figured it out, built huge desalination plants, and are able to, have plenty of water. They don't have no water supply over there outside of the ocean. And so, you know, maybe some rainwater, but you got that many people living in one spot, and you got to have more water than just the rain. So they built huge desalination plants. You know, the way the doggone dang government's put together is ridiculous. It must, like, go out and take a litmus test to see if you're an idiot, you can be a congressman.
So who can change it, and how can we change it?
You're going to have to change it at grassroots level. The average Joe's just going to have to get out there and utilize this technology and start building stuff and showing their neighbors that it is possible to do it. It's that simple. You know, that's why I say you get a bunch of us into a doggone decent machine shop, 30 days time, we'll walk up out of there with a perfect running engine. You know, and if you got an engine that'll run off of pure water, you can turn generator heads of that. See, right now, the gasoline engines that we use for our generators, or even diesels for that matter, diesel's better than the gas because you can run a diesel longer because of the way that the fuel actually lubricates the cylinders. And so it'll last longer at idle speeds. Now, where an internal combustion engine wasn't designed to idle for long periods of time, you could modify that engine to be able to run cooler and be able to run it at long periods of time. But they weren't designed that way. They were designed for, you know, get up and go, that kind of thing. But nonetheless, if you re-engineered these motors to run on water as opposed to, you know, gasoline or diesel, then you can run these things all day long. Because it's as simple as this. If that cylinder starts to get too hot, you can put more water down in that cylinder to literally cool it down in the process while you're still running the doggone engine.
The most important ingredient in this planet, the thing that matters the most in this world is water. We should never use water for anything.
You gotta drink it.
Canada used to have the most beautifulest lakes in the world, right? And almost half of them are now filled with vermin.
You can burn that water for fuel and turn around and get perfectly clean water on the other side. That's what I'm saying. So, you can literally use that doggone engine to clean the water supply. Period. No ifs, ands, or buts. When you burn hydrogen and oxygen, what you get out the other side is water. And if you design the exhaust system in there not to be able to corrode, like say, maybe use stainless steel exhaust all the way through the entire system, then you don't have to worry about it picking up rust particles or anything like that on the way down through there. And even if you did pick up rust particles, you could still filter that out on the opposite side. Nonetheless, water is the most amazing substance, the most destructive force, the most powerful force on this planet. And utilized properly, I mean, there's nothing you can't do. You can get electricity from water. You separate the hydrogen and oxygen, and during the recombination...
A stream flowing is friction itself.
Yeah. They're like Lord Kelvin generator, picking up static charge and falling water.
Just like the Egyptian pyramids and the aquifers beneath it, right? Every rock has a conductivity level, and all you need to do is make a potential difference between rocks, and now you have capacitors, and there you go.
You could use different types of materials, just like you said, rocks, like granite, and different types of materials.
A transistor is a rock. The computer that we're speaking into is nothing more than just rocks. We still live in the rock world. Everything on the planet is a rock.
Well, sure.
We don't get our different rocks from Mars and stuff like that. Maybe we got a couple little ones, but nothing that we utilize for our economic infrastructure or, you know, sciences or anything like that.
You could use different types of rocks like granite and other things and materials that you could literally build really beautiful landscaping waterfalls and stuff, and use the power of that water going over there and building up static charges to, you know, charge up battery banks and capacitors and stuff like that.
See, to me, this is like one of my strongest beliefs, you know, shiny rocks. Like, we talk about money, right? But isn't money really something that you can hold in your hand that's really worth of value? So if you have the capability and the creativity to take these shiny rocks and make them into beautiful objects, we know that people around the world pay the most for these things. People value rocks.
Yeah.
And yet everybody's chasing money.
Well,
you can build your entire home out of rocks. People built beautiful, beautiful castles out of rocks.
The system that we live in today is so doggone out of whack. I think it's just to the point where people are just saying it's just too messed up to try to fix it. But, you know, at some point, you're going to have to rethink the way you think stuff. Because as far as the oil industry, they ain't never going to run out of oil. I don't care how hard they try or how much they try to burn all the so-called fossil fuels in the world. It ain't going to happen. You're never, ever, ever going to run out of what they classify fossil fuel. And so if you really believe that CO2 is causing global warming / climate change / climate disruption or whatever it's going to be next week when the map don't add up, then you need to pay attention to what we're saying here. Because the oil industry is going to be around for hundreds if not thousands of years, and they're going to keep on doing the same exact thing that they do. Moving technology that could potentially put them out of business, because why would you want to buy oil if you could run your car on water? You're still going to need oil for bearings and stuff like that unless you build water-cooled bearings, which is possible, man.
Well, if things don't get hot or they don't reach a certain temperature, then you can create magnetic bearings, because right now, as it is in an engine, you can't have a magnetic bearing because it would lose its magnetic field, its amplitude.
Well, I'm glad you said that, because I'm glad you said that, because I also posted a link in there from Sky Collection, who did a pulse motor with its own magnetic bearings. It's not a new concept, but he does really good work on what he does, and essentially, like you said, Justin, these things are floating on a magnetic field, which is basically producing a frictionless bearing. And so you could literally engineer a car to do the same thing. And as long as that stayed cooled, you wouldn't lose the magnetic field of those bearings.
Right.
So, yeah, that's that's brilliant.
Eliminating friction is potential inefficiency, largely. Any mechanical device, if it has magnetic bearings, it's keeping it efficient of that device at 100%.
I guess the biggest portion of my aggravation and why I call it mad science is because I'm sitting here looking at the technology right before my very eyes, and I know that it'll work, and yet the mainstream auto industries and stuff, sure, you know, I've heard all the doggone naysayers talk about how, well, you know, they'd have to re-engineer their plants and do this and that, and it costs them so much money. Yeah, but
wouldn't that create legit jobs instead of letting a dam break and destroy homes and families and memories to create jobs? To justify that, right? You see, if we made change, it would create jobs. But you're still living in a monopolized system. The governments need to go. Lockmanship told me this years ago. We don't need no elections and no nominations. America used to do the right thing for the right moral reasons. They used to be the greatest country in the world. They're no longer the greatest country in the world. They're 27th in literacy. Right? They're 149th in life infancy. And the same thing with Canada and Australia and Great Britain. All of those countries.
Well,
you go to China, you go to India, you go to Russia. These places are becoming great. Iran no longer wants to deal with the American dollar. Right? Gaddafi did too. He cut out the middleman. He cut out America's supply. And he got killed for it. He turned the poorest country into one of the richest countries in the world. And he got killed for it. We want to make change, but America is blocking it.
Well,
not the people.
That's what I was saying.
But the people are too stubborn to change. Right?
The people got to wake up.
Generation X. If you look at the millennials, which is me, and how we think, we grew up with these computers in our hands at 2 years old.
Well, right now, with all the access of all the knowledge available to you right now, you know, somebody's got to step in there and start steering society in a different direction. Like, just a sheer example of me talking about running water in an engine, and then these people like Mythbusters come out there and say, well, you can't run your car on a hydrogen for this or whatever. Then, in the same video, while they're trying to debunk it, which they classified as myth-busted, that you can't run your car on hydrogen, they literally ran the car on pure hydrogen, and caused a flashback explosion because they had absolutely no flashback arrestor involved in running this. And they're saying, well, that's why you really don't want to run your car on hydrogen, because it's dangerous.
The first steam-powered vehicle was invented in the 1600s. It was a 4-mile-per-hour three-wheeler. Here we are 417 years later.
Well,
the first electric bicycle was patented in the 1900s on the button. Davenport made the first battery in 1847. So, what's going on here? There was this great uplift in brilliance, creativity, and then all of a sudden it comes to a halt? Why?
Well, because
who's stopping it? Who's preventing it?
If you keep your population stupid and ignorant of what could be done, then you can get by with taxing them on everything under the sun, including the sun. That's the whole thing. You know these companies out there know what I'm talking about is true. And you know that you could right now, you could engineer a perfect engine to run off the perfect fuel, and that thing wouldn't even pollute whatsoever. But you put that out on the market, and then now you got all these cars that you just built that are running gasoline, and if so, for some reason the people gather together and get a law passed that says that you can no longer use gasoline as fuel, now that we know that you can use water as fuel, now you got a whole bunch of cars that you can't sell. See, that's the whole deal, man. Government wants the taxes, the industry wants the power, so the industry goes out and buys up everything, good idea under the sun, patents it, puts it away on the shelf for later use, so someday if they ever did run out of water, which is a physical and scientifically proven impossibility, you can't do it. Because
the only way that we'll lose water is if the earth stops spinning or loses its magnetic field.
Oh, I'm talking about oil. You ain't never going to run out of oil.
Oh, no.
This is the
world. Bill Nye, the science guy, said that we wouldn't run out of oil in 1998. I used to watch these shows when I was a child. They were called Beyond 2000 and all these things. And he said that. He did. You can find that on YouTube. Bill Nye said that years and years and years and years and years ago, that we would never ever run out of oil.
That's right, because we're a carbon-based life form, and there's carbon-based life forms all over this planet. And so as long as that's going and the earth keeps doing the same thing that it's been doing with the chemistry and the heat and the pressure and all that.
What are your ears producing? Oils. What's your scalp produce? Oils.
Sure. Fish right. Have oil in them. Whale have oil in them.
Right.
So you ain't never going to run out of fossil fuel, and so as long as that goes on and all the people are sitting out there talking about we got to tax everybody for climate change, look, man, this is what really bothers me a lot. There's a lot of liberal groups out there that save the planet people, and they're always talking about how we got to fight against global warming and all that, and then guys like me will sit there and tell you we could have already done this 30, 40, 50 years ago or longer. We could have already resolved this issue, and yet they want to tax not only everybody else but themselves a carbon tax so that they can drive their cars to their doggone protests and stuff. Now, why wouldn't anybody be mad about that? I mean, if you got common sense and you know you can run something off of a perfect fuel that's not going to pollute, and yet people are out there protesting you, they don't want you running your car and stuff. Look, I ain't advocating that people go out smoking, because smoking may not be good for you, but nonetheless, one time I was smoking a cigarette, and this lady told me, says, well, secondhand smoke kills, you need to put that out. While she was getting in the back of getting in the front of a big old SUV and starting that thing up, I said, lady, I'll tell you what, I'll make you a deal. You shut off that SUV and I'll snuff out this cigarette, because I'm going to die faster sucking on your exhaust fumes than you are this doggone cigarette. You know,
that's
coming out of that SUV?
That was the same thing I seen. I was watching this one YouTube video, and literally this guy is sitting there, he's in his truck, and he's giving his wife a kiss goodbye, and he's complaining about the chemtrails and the planes, and his toddler was sitting there and breathing in the exhaust fumes from the truck on a tricycle.
Yeah.
Well, he's complaining.
So,
you know?
If you know
so
that...
just get rid of the gas car lawnmower or the electric lawnmower and use some manual labor and do like the Amish use and still do.
You don't even have to do that. You can still use the same equipment, but it just won't be pushing out carbon monoxide or hydrogen cyanide or whatever other crud might be mixed in because of the different fuel attitudes that they might have in the dog. Do you realize that you can go buy fuel at the gas station that some has detergents and all kinds of other crud in to supposedly make your motor cleaner? You pay a higher price for premium gas and you can get all these detergents and stuff. What's that cause when it burns, man? The chemicals coming up out of that probably are worse than anything. Thomas, are you around?
The whole thing's a side out.
I don't think Thomas is around. He might have went back to bed. Anyway,
yeah, whole thing's a side out.
I wanted to ask him a chemical question.
Hey, so my microphone did not allow me to talk if you guys are talking, and y'all have not been quiet 5 seconds the whole time I've been here. I've been here for a while. So it's not us.
Oh, I don't know what's going on, but you guys got to either turn the volume up on that microphone or come to it closer.
How about now?
That's better.
Anyway, my microphone will not allow me to talk if somebody else is talking.
Huh, that's weird.
Get a hammer.
Listen, here, we're listening.
So anyway... basically, there's a lot of...
some of us are falling asleep.
Well, I've been trying to get you involved and ask you a question about chemistry and the modern fuel that we burn. Do you know of different additives and byproducts that come about whenever you burn that fuel?
I got no idea, man.
Well...
there's plenty of information online, though.
Yeah. Oh, your microphone's working good now.
Oh, yeah. Really
loud. Alright, so anyway, there's a lot of different... you can buy premium unleaded that has all kinds of different additives in there. Okay.
Sure. Now they took over the radio station.
Yeah. We finally get him to talk. We can hear squeaking and rattling of paper.
and hiccups.
And hiccups.
Hey, you said you couldn't hear, man.
You can now. So, what do you think about what I've been talking about? You got any ideas on it? Huh?
No.
Yeah. Now you're going to hear him bring it up.
We gotta buy you guys a good microphone.
Feedback.
Alright, I'm gonna try and mute my mic and see if I can get them to talk. What do you think? Yeah? No? Alright, I'm muted my mic. Nothing. Still nothing. It's terrible for radio, man. Alright, my mic's back on. So anyway, if you go out there and you really pay attention to what's going on in the auto industry, there's a lot of dragging the feet and a lot of, oh, look, we discovered you can inject water into the cylinder in high-performance engines to reduce the doggone what's the word I was looking for earlier where it burns too fast? Pre-ignition. So you don't want your fuel because certain portion of the engine's getting too hot, and then under certain amounts of pressure and certain temperatures it will self-combust by using compression combustion. Same thing diesel engines been doing for a while, but since they want to run really super high performance engines and they want to try to get them as efficient as possible, they started doing the old water injecting again.
Well, they run water in our gas lines too, like our natural gas lines. They refine it and then they put water in it too, because water is volume, and they charge you by the volume.
Well, I've been trying to point out to people a long time ago, and I think that's pretty much what you just said, is that we've been using water in our fuel already. It's just that it ain't nobody going to the extent of doing it like I say, where you actually build an engine that runs specifically off of water, except for Stan Myers. Of course, his was hydrogen technology, and by using custom injectors and the way that he separated the hydrogen and oxygen was burning it 1979 running around town in a dune buggy that ran off of water.
Getting, it's almost there, Thomas. Up just a little bit more. There, perfect.
Alright, can we hear you guys now?
Wait a minute. We keep talking about water injection.
Yeah.
No, you don't need to inject the water, because the piston coming up creating pressure actually pressurizes the water and raises the temperature on its boiling point. Therefore, you can put the water mist into the motor as the piston is coming up. As it's coming down, sucking the water mist in. Then when it comes up, it's creating pressure, which raises the boiling point of the water, so it does not turn the steam until it hits top dead center and breaks over and starts down. Then it automatically turns into flash steam. So it doesn't have to be as complicated as fuel injection.
Sure.
You can actually suck the water in just like you do on a four-stroke engine.
Sure, and I agree with you. But the videos that they're showing, all this high-tech water injection, basically direct injection with the fuel...
Right.
That's how they're doing it, and they're doing it to stop pre-ignition.
Well, they're there for that.
What?
Overthinking and complicating when it's not necessary.
Yeah, but nonetheless,
the whole thing, because it's not necessary.
Nonetheless, the auto industry sitting there mocking people who talk about running your car off of water when they're sitting there trying to use water in the process to cool the combustion chamber down and
increase power.
Yeah. So that's where I'm going with that. It just drives me flat out insane, because especially all the mechanics that I've talked to these days, it's just as if their mind is stuck in the 1800s combustion engine. While they might know about fuel injections and how to get the best mileage or power out of their computers and stuff like that, they haven't even got a clue, man. In 1940s, this guy was sitting there injecting water into airplane engines to give it more power. And they couldn't figure out why, what was going wrong back then. And then when they finally figured it out, they started doing it a different way.
Well, it's the same thing with cavitation, right? The opposite, right? You're imploding the bubble of water, the molecule of water, right? You're splitting it in half.
Yeah.
Frequency, right? They don't. That's the ultimate efficient way of using water, because you can use waves, frequency waves, and coils, and just split it.
Oh, they also mentioned in there about how you would have to have a huge deal with condensators and intercoolers and stuff like that, which is it's a big hockahooey, because you don't. If you literally engineered the water jacket to preheat your fuel before it actually goes around, by the time it gets around, it's already to the point where it's already hot and about to flash the steam, because what's the water start to boil at 100 degrees?
I dropped out and just using one Advil.
Raymond?
Thomas and I were talking about it, Fedek. I'm sorry, I missed it.
The water start to boil at around about 100 degrees?
Celsius, yes, but that's at sea level. A lot of people miss that.
Mm-hmm. Well, nonetheless, you could compensate by, you know, running it a little bit warmer, no matter where you're at, or cooler, depending. Where there's a will, there's a way.
Yeah, water boils at Fahrenheit, 212 degrees at sea level. depend on barometric pressure of where you live, at the height, altitude you live, water actually boils at about 202-204 degrees.
So, how hard is it to get a cylinder up to 200 and whatever degrees?
It wouldn't be hard at all.
That's my point. And air compressors, if you ever run an air compressor long enough and went over there and made the misfortune of sticking your hand on the head of that air compressor, you only do it once.
Yeah, that's right.
So we know that compressed air will heat up. The air will heat up because it's compressed. So you can do the same thing with a vaporized water. You can compress it and get it hot and then send it into the combustion chamber already ready to go. As soon as that already pre-treated water hits inside that cylinder and flashes into steam, you get that expansion plus the compression and the temperature on the upstroke would actually cause it to self-ignite. Now, how does that sound like I'm wrong? Seriously.
Well, actually, you use the word ignite. It doesn't actually ignite.
Combust.
The steam.
Combust, whatever.
Right.
You know, so if you...
You change the form.
Yeah.
And you steam and with great pressure.
Water at 400 and some odd degrees, you're already way, way, way above the boiling temperature, even at my level. So... when that compression and the temperature, how do you think Fukushima got a hydrogen explosion? From
right.
Pressure and heat. You know? The steam pressure built up and it basically separated the hydrogen and oxygen from the deal and self-combusted. It's that simple. Now, if you're worried about radioactive stuff, why boil water with high radioactive stuff when you can do the same doggone thing using everything you've learned from air compressors to induction heating and that kind of stuff? Man, they say there ain't no such thing as perpetual motion. Okay, whatever. Regardless, if you can get something to run and generate enough power to literally run induction heating systems, there are induction heaters right now that you put a piece of metal in between there and it will literally liquefy that metal. Oh, but that takes too much power. You can't never generate enough power and stuff. I've been done hurt it all, man. It's frustrating as heck. Because between everything you've learned from compressing air and atmosphere and vacuums, you know you can get stuff to boil faster in a vacuum. Why couldn't you engineer a power plant if you want to run it off of steam to literally create a vacuum and pressure in different places to generate enough heat to literally turn that water into steam and run doggone turbines? If you got an internal combustion engine that is running water, we already know that there's a lot of waste heat on them engines. The heat is taken away by the radiator, it's taken away by the exhaust, and if you focus all that heat energy where you want it to go, instead of having a radiator system there, you allow that heat to build itself up and you allow the exhaust heat to build up as well, you got more than enough temperature to boil water into steam. Am I wrong? Yeah? No?
You're right.
So...
you know, said something about using vacuum to lower the actual boiling point of different liquids.
Yeah?
That's exactly how, and I've mentioned it several times, I haven't quite used it in the past few months, but my cold steam turbine, that's exactly how it works. But it doesn't use the steam in itself to turn the turbine. It used the explosive power of the water molecule turning into steam, expanding to make the water gyrate or vibrate, and causes the magnets to vibrate. And that's the whole point in lowering the pressure. It lowers the boiling point of the water. The water turns to steam, causes the water to agitate, and that moves the magnets. Now, the thing is, You said your magnets have used real steam by heating it, the water. Then what you've done is you've raised the temperature up to the danger point of losing your magnetism in your magnet. But if you put a vacuum on the water, you lower the temperature. Therefore, you do no harm to your magnets. The magnets are sealed in either epoxy or nickel. Therefore, they don't rust. The water doesn't mess them up. And the water can be filthy as heck. It doesn't even have to be a clean water. And you can still use it.
Yeah.
That is your cold steam turbine. I have a video on YouTube showing me boiling water at 62 degrees.
I want somebody out there to Google up at what temperature things will burn. Anything. I don't care what it is. Paper, wood, plastic. At what temperature will something begin to burn? Google it up. As soon as I see an answer, I'll say something crazy.
Yeah.
So, if you know that you can get certain temperatures, and you can cause things to burn, where could you take that? Literally.
Well, you know, you're talking about self-ignition without a spark or anything else. If you, anything that will burn, if you heat it hot enough, it needs no spark. It will spontaneously combust.
Yep. So.
Fahrenheit 451. And the rules of putting out a fire apply in reverse. Totally. I mean, how do you put a fire out? Well, okay, remove the heat. Mm-hmm. If you cool a fire fast enough, you don't need water, you don't need anything, you just need cold air. If it's cold enough, you can actually remove the heat from the flames faster than they can burn, and they put the fire out. You
That's
take
right.
copper wire, and roll it up into a coil. A real small copper wire rolled into a tight coil, and pour it down over a birthday candle, and it'll put the flame out. It will suck the heat out of the flame so fast, it can't continue to burn.
Do you know what temperature that inside of a catalytic converter goes at?
I really don't, not right offhand.
Well, one example, and I know that's not the maximum potential, but one example is a guy doing a test called, he calls his deal an HCAT, where he's essentially sending hydrogen and oxygen into a catalytic converter and interacting with the catalyst inside that catalytic converter and producing temperatures over 600 degrees without no flame. He just puts hydrogen and oxygen and it interacts with the catalyst inside that, which produces that over 600 degrees. Now, does that 600 degrees overtake what it took to start something to get it to self-combust?
Yeah.
Well, there you go, man. Right there inside the catalytic converter, whenever you're burning your exhaust, you actually do have water molecules coming down through there. And that interacts with that catalyst. The first portion of a catalytic converter is to break things down into smaller, and then the second one is to actually create the temperature that reburns the waste fuel on there. So inside a catalytic converter, right there is some technology that proves what I've been talking about all along. And so you can get doggone water up to 600 degrees. What happens to water at 600 degrees? And under pressure. You see what I mean?
Yeah. You know, to me, from the day one when they invented the catalytic converter and the reason why they did it, to me, it is one of the dumbest things scientists have ever done in modern day time, because it doesn't solve the problem. The problem is the wasted fuel.
Yeah.
So that pig will go and burn it so it doesn't pollute through air. So we'll just burn it after it goes through the motor, because it's not burning all the fuel that's going into the motor. You do not have that problem when you burn gasoline fumes in a gasoline motor. And they will run the motor just as efficiently as the gasoline itself.
Okay, let me re-ask this question that I asked earlier, and I'm sure you guys probably have heard of it. Have you heard of an engine called a flame licker?
Yes.
You want to explain to people what it is about?
I don't know.
All right, well, essentially a flame licker is doing exactly what you just explained. It burns like butane or propane or alcohol or any gas fuel, and the flame is on the outside of the engine. It has an intake port that grabs off the exhaust fumes off of that flame, and that is the fuel for the engine. So right there in the flame licker, it shows you right there and then that by vaporizing fuel, you're wasting a lot of fuel with the flame licker design because you got an open flame out there. You don't need all that out there. But if you pre-treat your fuel before you ever even put it in there, you can get one of those old flame licker deals to be the perfect running engine because now all you need is exhaust fumes in order to be able to run the doggone thing.
Right.
Now imagine taking one Briggs & Stratton engine that you're going to use your doggone, you got a fuel tank on there. You're going to use that fuel tank. You know for a fact, because you can actually smell it. When you're running that engine, you can smell the gas fumes, depending on how you got your air-fuel mixture on the carburetor, will determine the actual extent of the smell coming out of the exhaust. Nonetheless, that exhaust is flammable. You could pump that exhaust through a system that would literally put it into the intake of the second motor. You could run two engines off of the price of one fuel.
And exactly. Yes, you could. And then, that would absolutely work.
Yeah, and then you could actually see how many engines you could put in line to run off the same thing, because at some point it's going to run out of whatever it's necessary to burn in the fuel. So, like, let's say you got 12 engines in a row and number 13 won't run because the exhaust is too clean. You just run 13 engines off of one tank of fuel at the same exact time, with the same amount of power output on the shaft.
I don't know if you get exactly 13 motors, but you definitely get 5 or 6.
I'm just throwing that out there as a hypothetical, because I don't know of anybody who's ever tested to see how many you could get down the line. You may only be able to get 2 or 3.
Right.
You may only be able to get 2, but nonetheless, if you're running 2 engines for the price of 1, that's pretty impressive.
All right, but now if you can get 2 to burn like that, the exhaust out of the second would be super hot, and then you could use that air because you're not actually combusting to run your water motor.
Yeah.
So you could definitely get 3. Absolutely.
So there you go, man. That's the whole
thing. And the third one wouldn't even use fuel. It would just simply use the heat off the first 2.
And for those... For those of you out there who seem to be skeptical about what I'm saying, go back and look in history what they used to do back in the 50s and stuff like that, where they put spark plugs down in the end of their exhaust to ignite the exhaust to get these huge flames to pop up out of the back. Because
I forgot all about that.
Yeah.
I was a teenager when they were doing that.
Yeah, that's how they were
it. We're talking back in the late 50s, the early 60s, teenagers were doing that.
Yeah, it looked cool. That's why they wanted to do it, you know. But it basically, it shows that exhaust is flammable. And so take a flame licker engine, put it next to your doggone exhaust pipe on your car, and run it off the fumes. The whole thing is you could use one engine for a pre-treater of your fuel to actually run the next ones in line off of exhaust fumes.
Yep.
And, you know,
the simplest way to do it would be to run nothing but gasoline fumes to run the first engine.
Yeah.
Then run, take the heat off the exhaust to run your water engine.
Yep. So there you go.
By using the gasoline fumes, you increase your efficiency 6 times.
What would water do at 600 degrees?
Oh, my God. Unreal power, because it only takes about 30 degrees above boiling point to create 20 PSI.
Yep. So basically, whenever I was in the United States Navy, they had these boiler systems that had a bunch of big old giant pipes all the way around the wall of the boiler itself. And
right.
We had these big old injectors, kind of look like one of those things like at the car wash.
Right.
That would spray that fuel inside there, and then they'd stick a deal in there, and they'd ignite that fuel. And once that fuel got those pipes red hot and kept them red hot, You didn't have to continue to ignite anything. It was the heat from those pipes that kept the ignition. Then whenever they put the water through the pipes, it instantaneously flashed the steam, which gave them 650 to 1,250 PSI.
The thing is, at 1,200 PSI, you're only talking like 600 or 800 degrees.
Yeah, but nonetheless, well, they were able to run all the big turbines and everything to generate power on a destroyer and an aircraft carrier and a fast frigate and all these big giant ships out there. They were able to run it off of steam pressure.
Right.
You know, so even back then, you know, they could have made those ships so much more energy efficient just by using a little bit of physics, like the way that a jet, what do you know, those doggone jet skis, they
right.
pump water out of the lake, run it through high pressure pumps and shoot it out the back, and that pressure is able to push that jet ski at really ridiculous speeds.
You're right.
So instead of running big turbines to try to run steam engines and such, they could have been pumping water out of the ocean through circulating through a big old the equivalent of a jet ski. It saved a heck of a lot of fuel, man, and been able to get that thing to go at crazy speeds. You realize how fast them jet skis will get on that water?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've seen some of them. I mean, they haul butt.
Well, it's not that we don't have good technology. It's not even that they didn't engineer it to be good. The internal combustion is a really impressive piece of engineering. To get it to do what it does, even as inefficient as it does, it's still impressive technology. But if somebody wanted to take that just a little bit farther, you could get that same doggone engine and engineer it to put the fuel in like Raymond was talking about and vaporize the fuel before it ever even goes in there. And so now you make it yet even more efficient. And then if you learn ways to recapture the wasted heat that normally goes out via the radiator or the exhaust, then you make it yet even more efficient. Then if you turn around and have a way to clean the exhaust and feed it back into the doggone intake, you make it yet even more efficient. So, there's your mad science for you.
Yeah.
Man.
I didn't even think about the radiator when I was thinking about the running. So, actually, the radiator cooling system, that would put out enough heat to run a water motor.
Yeah.
Well, so you could actually run three motors on one gasoline motor.
Your average engine operating temperature, depending on which engine you got, will run anywhere from 180 to 220 degrees. Anything above that and it's overheating and you're sitting on the side of the road because your radiator pressurized your hoses or your radiator itself and sprung a leak. And so now you ain't got no coolant, and so now that engine will tear itself apart if you try to keep on driving. So, there right there's proof of what we're talking about. You know, if you want that water to reach extremely high temperatures, take away the radiator.
Right.
Eventually, you'll have steam pouring up out of that engine, and the engine can only take so much before the viscosity of the oil breaks down and friction starts eating into the bearings. And then, bam, you got a piece of junk motor. But what if you designed the thing from start to finish to have basically water-cooled bearings, and you're using cool water on the bottom of the engine to keep it lubricated, and you're using hot steam on the top engine to keep it running? See what I mean?
Yep. I see.
The only way anything will ever start tearing itself up with friction is if it gets above its temperature where the actual metal itself becomes soft. That's it. Otherwise, you could have a water-cooled bearing that you could run at thousands of RPMs, and as long as that water could stay cool, that bearing would never chew itself up. It's not possible. It's not reaching its temperature to where it's soft enough to do it. You see what I mean?
Yep.
So, that's the simplicity of it. You got any crazy thoughts on the matter?
Mm-hmm.
Well, what I'd like to see another YouTube video somebody do is get a couple Briggs and Stratton and see if you can run the second one off of a doggone exhaust pipe.
Right.
You know it's wasting fuel because you can smell it. How many times you fired up your lawnmower and you didn't smell it?
Really?
And even this, even if your exhaust fumes are pretty clean, if you got an old junky lawnmower and that thing's spitting out smoke, you think that smoke won't burn inside the combustion chamber? From the, like, oil? If you got oil seeping in on the valves and you got white smoke pouring out of your doggone lawnmower, that stuff will burn in the combustion chamber as well. So, there you go, man. Look, it's going to take the average Joe to decide they want to do this kind of stuff in order to make it happen. What I'd love to see is a massive movement to see what you could do. See what's possible. Don't deny it until you try it. Get out there, see how far you can push it. You know, there's guys that modified two-stroke engines just by putting a little shaft and a check valve inside there to basically run a internal combustion engine off compressed air or steam. It's a simple modification. You put a rod...
If you check back in history, that's exactly what a gasoline engine is. An internal combustion engine is absolutely nothing more than a steam engine that's been converted.
Yep.
That's all it is. I mean, look at the diesel engine. It was not designed to burn diesel fuel. It was designed to burn coal dust.
Well, even on a diesel engine, the only difference between a diesel engine and your modern-day gasoline engine is the length of the compression stroke, because you want more temperature because you're going to use compression ignition.
Exactly.
So, if we know we can take a diesel engine, put a longer stroke on it, get a higher compression rate off of the deal, and at certain temperatures anything will either flash the steam or spontaneously combust. If you're running the doggone steam engine off of coal dust, that's... You see what I mean, man?
Yep.
Why I call it mad science? Because we're sitting here right now talking about technology that's been around forever and a day, and it seems like everybody wants to try to do it the hard way.
Yeah, right.
You sit there.
Well, that's too easy. We got to make it more complicated than that.
Yeah.
Why?
When I talked about the Evinrude direct injection boat motors, their two strokes are outdoing people's four strokes. Alright, because of the way they designed it. They got direct injection going in there, and if you look at the doggone schematics of how these engines actually work, they're putting their exhaust right down into the water, which goes out the bottom of the deal into the deal, and that's how they get rid of their exhaust. But it's down in the water jacket. The exhaust is in the water jacket. So you know that because of that piston going up and down, some of that water is actually making it into that engine.
Yeah.
You see what I mean?
Yep.
And so that's why they got so much power. And they're doing it with snowmobiles and jet skis and stuff like that. There's other engines out there that are utilizing what we've been talking about. They just kind of do it on the down low and under people's radar, so to speak.
Right.
But nonetheless, even when you're driving your car, your truck or whatever, it doesn't matter whether it's gas or diesel, you're still burning water in it. No matter how hard you try, you're not going to not be able to burn water in it, because if you live in a humid climate, it's getting sucked in the air breather. And if you've ever noticed, your car seems to run better in the fog than it does on a regular day. Why is that, Raymond?
Because the water in a fog is water. It is not steam. It's not a vapor. It's actual water molecules floating in the air because they're so small. And that water, when it goes into your air breather, the piston, when it fires, is so hot that it's hot enough to turn that water into steam, and it adds to your power.
Yep.
So and that's why a lot of people you see on YouTube, there's a lot of guys that are using these sonic vaporizers, humidifiers.
Yeah.
And taking the fog that comes off of them and hooking it up to their air breather. I have done this several times on several different vehicles, and it absolutely, definitely improves your gas mileage.
Well,
I mean, if you think about it, it makes sense.
Mythbusters.
Water turning to steam is 3.7 times more powerful than gasoline.
Mythbusters try to disprove the concept of running your car off of water, in the process prove that you can run your car off of water, plus discredited themselves. So where I used to be a fan of Mythbusters, now I can't stand to even look at them anymore, because they were, you know, out there busting myths and doing science and all that kind of stuff, and you know, you'd think that they would be honest and upfront about stuff, but when they did their deal about not being able to run your car on water, they were mocking people like myself and other people who say that you can run your car off of water. And in the process of doing that, they put a tank of pure hydrogen and run it down into the carburetor with absolutely no flashback arrestor, and then got a hydrogen explosion because of the flashback. And then it's like, well, that's probably why you shouldn't run your car off of water, because it's dangerous or whatever, you know?
Right.
And I'm like, you guys are idiots.
Uh-huh. Anybody
who's ever messed around with hydrogen cells knows you have to have a flashback arrestor, otherwise that spark will follow its path all the way back to the source, and you'll get a flashback. But they know that. Raymond, I don't know what their purpose is or whether they just sold out for money or whatever, but they know that. If they're smart enough to figure all the rest of that stuff out, they know all they had to do is put a flashback arrestor on there and run it through the carburetor or whatever, and they wouldn't have never got that flashback, and that thing would have ran off of pure hydrogen.
Yes, it will.
So,
yes, it will.
That's where
they
lost their credibility.
Guess what? It'll run off acetylene, too.
Yeah.
I did that. I ran out of gas back years ago when I lived in North Carolina, a lot younger man, and I ran out of gas about 3 miles away from the service station, and there wasn't a lot of traffic on the road. I just simply took my air breather off. I had my oxygen acetylene tank in the back, set the acetylene regulator on 3.5 PSI, shoved the torch down in the carburetor, turned it on, started the truck up. Fortunately, it was a standard shift truck, standard transmission, and I just eased the clutch out until it took off. Now, I couldn't accelerate, because in order to accelerate, I would have to increase the acetylene flow.
Yeah.
But it actually ran the truck at about 5-6 miles an hour, and I just drove down 3 miles to the service station and filled up with gasoline.
But nonetheless, you could have engineered a throttle system that would mix the air and the acetylene together.
Yes, no problem at all. That would have been very simple.
Because by itself, that acetylene would be pretty damaging to the engine because of how it actually exploding or whatever inside the combusting inside the piston. But that's only because the people who's tried it before, they weren't factoring in that you're not just sucking in the acetylene, you're also sucking in oxygen and hydrogen and stuff like that from the air breather at the same time, and you ain't got a proper mixture, so you get a really hot, powerful burn inside there.
Well, not as hot as you would think. I mean, for example, I've got acetylene torch, and I have a propane torch for cutting steel.
Yeah.
And the propane actually burns at 600 to 800 degrees hotter than the acetylene.
Well, what I meant by saying about hot is like the power. You can go watch these videos where they put glass heads on top of motors and watch them burn. And watch the difference between acetylene burning and gasoline and the alcohol. They actually burned alcohol in there. The alcohol is more like a liquid. You're not even burning off of even a fraction of the alcohol. It's just the fumes that are burning. And so it looks like it looks like water flushing around through there. The gasoline had your normal ignition, and you could see where the flaws in the actual burn was because you're not burning off all the fuel. And then when they went around to the acetylene, you could actually see the glass had begun to crack because of how much power that that acetylene actually had inside that combustion chamber.
Oh, Lord, yeah.
Yeah. So that any of these fuels would be perfect fuels. You just got to get your air and fuel mixture right so that you're getting the burn at the temperature that you want it to be at.
Right.
Yeah, so it's all about engineering, man. And as far as running the car off of water, look, you burn a bunch of logs or coal or whatever that it takes to boil that water, and once it gets up to steam and the steam expansion and pressure that's built up from that right there is enough to push that piston down. So,
oh, by the way, let's go back just for a second to when I said I ran my pickup truck.
Yeah.
It was a 302 V8 Ford. And I did have flashback arresters on my torch. All my torches had flashback arresters on them.
See? And that's why it worked.
Yes.
Otherwise, you could have had a catastrophically boom, at least up the hose itself.
Right.
But when the Mythbusters did that, that not only discredited them, I was discouraged because, man, these guys were like my heroes for a long time because they did science and did some really cool stuff, you know, to prove or disprove things, but
I'm totally with you. I was hooked on them big time for years, and then all of a sudden they did that, and they also did the Wallace Mentos wheel,
yeah,
with the propane, and they blew that one out of the water. I mean, golly, it was so ridiculous what they did. They built it so small. And then they didn't use sunlight. They used those halon lights in their warehouse.
Yeah.
Almost no heat at all. And I mean, oh, it turns. Yeah, but I don't see any real power there. Come on, man. Give me a break. Mother Earth News magazine built a Mentos wheel in 1953 in a warehouse. Okay, they built it over 20 feet in diameter. It produced over 5 horsepower of energy. Picked a 180-pound man up off the floor. Didn't even, to the human eye, you couldn't even see any or notice any difference in its power. No effort at all. They did not use halon lights because they didn't have them back then, but they actually used mirrors to take sunlight and project it into the warehouse on one side of the wheel. And of course, the other side being in the warehouse was in the shade. And this thing was doing exactly the same thing. The one that Mythbusters built was only 3.5-4 feet in diameter, and it turned 1 revolution per minute. The one Mother Earth News magazine built was over 20 feet. I think it was 22 or 23 feet in diameter. It turned 1 revolution per minute. But because it was so big around, the torque was unbelievable.
Yeah.
Torque can be turned into speed, and speed can be turned into torque.
Yep. Well, there you go. And so using that big, massive amount of torque and the proper gear ratios, you could have done like a high RPM gear exchange to turn a high voltage generator and turn that high voltage into usable power.
Yep.
So,
what is it? According to your engineers, 1 horsepower is approximately 743 watts, correct?
I don't know. I didn't do the math.
I think it's 147. The 43, 174.
Nonetheless, you can get a lot of power out of it.
Yes.
Look, one time I saw this video on YouTube. Guy takes apart an old doggone microwave oven. And the bottom of that microwave oven was a little geared motor that turned the little plate on the bottom of the microwave to spin your food around inside the microwave. And so he's sitting there and he's talking about how he's going to see if he can figure out anything to do with all this stuff, and he happens to turn this gear over on this thing, and he ends up shocking the crud out of himself. And I'm like, there ain't no way in heck that little thing shocked the crud out of him like that. So I had to test it for myself, all in the name of science, of course. So I got one out of a doggone microwave. I already had some laying around, so I stripped the wires on there, and I held onto those wires, and I spun that sucker around and lit me up, man, like you wouldn't believe. And what was going on was that, you know, because of that big plastic wheel thing on there, and I spun that thing around, I used the torque from my finger to spin that around, which turned those gears and spin that little magnet inside there with the smaller gears up to some serious RPMs and produced a high voltage charge, would lit me up.
Right.
So it's not that we can't do it, man. You don't even have to have, like you said, you don't even have to have this thing spinning fast in order to be able to produce voltage. And what I've been saying all along is that voltage is pressure, and you can get work done with pressure. So if you use energy in a different manner in which we're using it right now, then you can still get the same amount of power out that you would otherwise. Now, people will argue with me till they're blue in the face that you can't do this. The power company's been shooting several thousands of high-frequency volts down the power line so they can get it to go out a long distance. They got a big, huge step-down transformer that's not only a step-down transformer, but it's also a capacitor to smooth out the signal and bring it down to a range that they can then, in turn, drop it into your house without setting fire to your wire.
Right.
So it ain't no different from what they're doing to what I'm talking about. And so for all the folks out there that want to argue about currents, watts, and amps because they don't understand what it is that I'm saying, I want you to take a flyback transformer or a Beckett oil burner igniter and take that thing and ground a wire near to the insulation of the wire itself. What temperature did you guys say that things will catch on fire? Yeah?
It all depends on the material itself. Each thing's got a different flash point.
Well, what's the basic, general view of what's the minimum?
I'd say somewhere between 450 and 600 degrees.
Okay, between 450 to 600 degrees right there, you know that arc that just came off of that doggone flyback transformer or Beckett oil burner igniter is at least 450 to 600 degrees at that arc.
You know, lead melts at 640, 660 degrees and runs like water, and you can touch it, a piece of paper to it, and it will instantly catch on fire.
Well, think about what I'm saying here.
Right.
You have 450 to 600 degrees or more right there at the insulation of that wire. You'll catch that plastic on fire that normally insulates your hand from the electrical current.
Well, most of your commercial electric wire, it's stamped on it every so many feet. It's a good up to 600 degrees. 600 volts, 600 degrees.
All right, so there you go. So if you run high voltage through there and you can literally set fire to that, you know you got at least 600 degrees.
Yep, and it'll catch on fire.
Yeah, it will. So high voltage, knowing that you can take a high frequency, high voltage and generate at least 600 degrees, what could you do with that knowledge?
A lot.
Well, I say you could boil water. I say you could instantly ignite water.
Not only about igniting it, you'd have to break it down first.
Sure you could. The frequency's shaking it apart like a microwave.
Yeah, okay, I see what you're saying. You're not igniting the water. You're turning the water to a gas, which is highly combustible and explosive. So, yes, it would burn.
Yeah.
But you have to break it down. But it would be so fast, it would be almost instantaneous.
Yeah, well,
that's
see...
That's what you're saying, yes.
The mercury arc rectifier took a pool of liquid metal, which is mercury, shot in high voltage AC, which created a dead short and instantaneously heated that up to the point where it vaporized the mercury into gas. The high voltage AC kept on coming in, which turned around and energized that gas into the fourth state of matter, being plasma. That plasma pressurized that tube, and out the other end of that doggone mercury arc rectifier, they was able to get high voltage rectified DC current to run huge high voltage elevator motors back in the late 1800s. Now tell me, am I just crazy, or are we doing things wrong? It's not hard to produce high voltage. You produce high voltage rubbing your feet across the carpet. But people like will argue with you till you're blue in the face. Oh, well, you can't ruin your house with that. Man, go out there and get you a Wimshurst generator or a Van de Graaff or a Lord Kelvin device. Don't matter. Hook it to a capacitor bank. Let that thing run for a while and then run over there and grab both sides of that capacitor and tell me the same thing you just spewed out of your mouth. Alright? When that thing knocks you into the next dimension, if you survive and get on the other side, then you might want to tell everybody what we've been talking about here on Mad Science. There's a lot of power that can be stored in the capacitor. And we're just talking about maybe one or two capacitors. The atmospheric group got four 250 foot poles up in the air. They got a piece of wire stretched all the way around these poles, and they're grabbing up 2,000 volts of electricity out of the air. Ain't no moving parts other than the wind outside in the atmosphere. And they're pulling down 2,000 volts, putting it into a huge capacitor bank, and coming out with 9,000 volts on the other side. That's pretty impressive. You want to go over and check that, check to see if that 9,000 volts has a punch, Raymond? Hey.
Sorry, I muted the mic. Go ahead.
You want to go over and into the atmospheric group and go down to their 9,000 volt charged up capacitors and test the theory of how powerful those things are?
Yes, I do. I want to do that. I definitely want to do that.
You want to grab a hold of them?
Heck no.
That's what I was asking. Stick your tongue on that fly swatter.
Yeah. You know, I don't mind slapping a electric taser to my leg, you know, at 4 million volts. That doesn't bother me at all. You know, it hurts just for a split second, but I'm not grabbing those giggle 9,000 volt wire stuck up in the air. No way.
How bad could it be?
Electricity, but it's how you use it that counts.
Yeah, don't learn electrical safety by accident.
Exactly.
But either way, what I'm trying to point out is look, if the average Joe decides they want to like get the so-called energy crisis resolved once and for all, so you don't have to hear crazy people like me talking about it, then gather up the wisest minds in your local community, gather up the tools in your local community, and humor me long enough to build a doggone internal combustion engine and start off from start to finish to engineer this thing to run directly off of pure distilled water. Because water is two parts hydrogen and one part oxygen, if you can develop the pressure to separate it and you can develop the temperature to combust it, then you literally have an internal combustion engine that will work off of pure distilled water without no fancy tricks, no fancy injectors. You take that water, you put it in a super fine mist, and the compression and the temperature inside that cylinder will combust that fuel and push that piston down, turning the camshaft and so on down the line, and there you go. You have the holy grail of free energy. Because all you got to do from that point on, put your rain barrel outside, and now you got fuel. Go down to your local creek and with a bucket, and now you got fuel. Go to your community water supply, or go to your spigot, turn the water on, and you got fuel. Drive down the air with a dehumidifier attached to your system and you'll pick fuel up on your way. Now, I know this sounds like ridiculousness because the mainstream auto industry and the science industry and the governments of the world want to tell you things ain't possible. You can't do it because of this. The second law of thermodynamics says, folks, we ain't trying to violate any of the laws of physics, even though I don't agree with all of them. Nonetheless, not trying to defy any of them. I'm trying to show you how to literally take those laws of physics, use them to your advantage, burn the perfect fuel, thus forth, once and for all. You ain't getting no carbon out the other side if you ain't putting no carbon in the on the front side. Plain and simple.
What is it Thomas says a lot? When life gives you lemons, make lemonade.
Yeah.
And then I turned around and said, when life gives you crap, make fertilizer.
Yeah.
You don't sit down and cry because this happened or that happened. You figure out why it happened, and then you change it around to your advantage.
You think
just like just said a minute ago, put it to your advantage.
You think
you don't
lemonade
defy the laws of physics.
You think lemonade has water in it?
Yeah, quite a bit. Actually.
So not only could you use the lemonade for electrolyte for a battery, but you could also use the water for the fuel to run the same vehicle.
Right.
Imagine that. You're going to drive your car on lemonade. And then when you
know,
get thirsty.
You said something a minute ago that got me thinking. Take a dehumidifier in the desert, and you can actually suck water out of the air.
Yeah.
Now you turn around, you take the sonic humidifier, and you take the water, and you turn it into water bubbles. I mean, little water particles, which are actually water. Now you run that through your car, and it turns to steam and gives you more power.
Yep. There was a survival technique that's been around for as long as I can remember, to where if you were out in the middle of the desert and you needed some water and you didn't have access to a water supply, you could literally stretch a piece of plastic over a container. The atmosphere inside the container and the temperature difference outside the container would literally create condensation and build up small amounts of water inside there. And in order to get more water, you just keep repeating the process.
Yep.
So, man, I paid attention in science class. So, somebody call in this radio show and tell me where you think I'm wrong. You ever seen those little boxing monkeys on a stick where you pull the strings and they look, put their little fist out like that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's going to be me, man. I'm going to create a ruckus. I'm going to be like that little boxing monkey with my little fist going in and out every time you pull my strings.
You're a trip, bro.
Yeah.
That's why we throw you under the bus every once in a while. We just see you bounce.
Well, we don't call it mad science for nothing.
Yeah,
you know,
got that right.
And you guys, like, I'm glad you got your microphone working now, because that is, like, really frustrating.
Right.
It's, like, bad for radio. And, like, Raymond, are you there? Thomas, are you there? And you guys ain't saying nothing. I know you can hear me.
Yeah.
So, I know what's up. Anyway, what do you say we all take a coffee break and I put on a long song? That way we can get some fresh coffee and refresh and come back and polish off the last hour of Mad Science.
You got that right.
Space. The final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission. To explore strange new worlds. To seek out new life and new civilizations. To boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap.
Ah! Ah! Ah!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
This is truly amazing. A portable television studio.
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Can you really
crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
Yeah, give me the number for 9112. You're listening to Mad Science at www.shazizradio.com. If you want to join in on the chat, jump over there to the superchat.html. And if you want to call in, just add me as a contact on Skype. That's user Shaziz. Or you can actually type in Raymond Hedman and send him a contact as well. He'll probably talk to you. Anyway, Raymond, I had a question for you.
Yeah.
What exactly is it that causes water to boil?
The agitation of the molecule being heated up.
Yeah. If you heat something up, it gets faster. If you cool it down, it gets slower. Right?
Right.
So,
and you know, moving water actually creates its own friction and heats itself.
Yeah. See, there's farmers have been doing this for years. They put these like wind turbine things out there in the middle of their cattle ponds, and all it has to do is the wind blows this thing and agitates the water and keeps it from freezing up. As long as
right.
that water's moving, it won't freeze. And so with that said, there's also a technology out there called cavitation, where if you spin water fast enough, you'll literally get it to boil into steam. And using all the physics that you know about steam, they got ways by which they make these drums that actually have ports in there to create intentional water hammers, is what you don't normally want in your steam pipes, because those water hammers are essentially moisture built up in that steam that's going to go flying down that pipe under pressure and slam against the wall. So that's that banging noise you hear every once in a while. Your hot water heater's got it's not regulating the temperature, and it's got a water hammer going on that's banging against the pipes. So you want to check that out and get that fixed. Put a different thermostat on your hot water heater so you don't cause yourself to blow up, man. But anyway.
You know, I was telling you off air that I've mentioned this a couple times in the past on the same show, that I took and weighed out exactly 1 pound of water in the wintertime and measured the temperature of it, and it was 42 degrees. I put it in my blender, turned the blender on a puree, and in 20 minutes the temperature rose to 92 degrees, exactly 50 degrees in 20 minutes. Now the thing is, the blender was a plastic case, and I had no insulation around this thing at all. Nothing to keep the heat from dispersing. So I'm just wondering, had I insulated it really good, maybe I could have got it to well over 100 degrees.
Well, and yeah, that's a probably good point that I also wanted to talk about on this water engine idea, was that the way that the exhaust is right now, if you try to run this thing and get the temperature up, by using the exhaust to allow that heat to disperse out there,
right.
that keeps it at a maintained temperature. So you can't get it up over a couple hundred degrees. You can't get it up over 140 degrees, actually, with a two-stroke engine. That's some of the deals I've been running. And
right.
without any outside force adding heat to that deal, it'll take a long time to get it going. But what you can do is literally put a valve on the exhaust portion to where you can cut back on how much exhaust can actually get out, and you can raise that temperature up. It's basically like what you just said, by insulating it, not allowing
right.
that heat to transfer out. You want the heat to stay in until you get it up to operating temperature, and then open your exhaust wide open or whatever once it's up to temperature. You could actually have it set up automatically to, if the temperature drops down, to close off the exhaust a little bit. You know, you still need some of that pressure to be able to get out so you ain't blowing your seals out. But in the same sense, you don't want all the heat getting out as well, right?
Oh, my God. I just happened to think of something. I haven't used it in years. But it just dawned on me, I have a V8 diesel engine here in a pickup truck, a one-ton truck.
Yeah.
The modern pickup truck diesel motors, or cars even for that matter, the modern ones have glow plugs in them. I'm going to try to run that thing on, and I've got several, what do you call them, sonic humidifiers.
Yeah.
I will see if I can't run that engine on it. With the glow plugs in it, it should run.
That's right. Once you run that thing up, get the compression up inside there, and crazy enough, in the model airplane community, there are diesel engines in the modern, actually in some of the older, like in 40s and 50s style, you know, airplanes that they got. They have no glow plug whatsoever. They just use the compression to actually ignite the fuel inside the cylinder.
I don't remember having one that did not have a glow plug in it, but I did have glow plugs that you put the battery on the engine before you started to get the glow plug hot so it would fire the first time.
Yeah.
Once it fired, then you could disconnect the battery and the glow plug would stay hot.
Well,
it would the heat from the fire for the next cycle.
YouTube
two cycle motors.
YouTube diesel RC motors, and you'll see some that actually have no glow plug involved. What they do have on the top, instead of where the glow plug used to be, they got deal where they can raise and lower the compression by turning this screw in and out. They can actually increase the, like, decrease the compression so they can turn it over rapidly, or increase the compression so that they can, once it actually starts to try to kick, they can increase the compression and then change the fuel so that they can get it to run smoothly.
Oh man, that's cool.
Yeah, but there's no glow plug involved. It uses compression combustion to actually get the thing going. And so if you can do that on a small scale, you can do it on a large scale.
Exactly.
And that's what I've been trying to say all along, man. And, you know, if you get the right temperature, anything will combust, man.
That's sharp. I like that.
If it starts off with just running it like a steam engine, even if you could get the internal combustion engine to run like a steam engine, like such as, you know, the temperature inside that cylinder is hot, all right? And you got a coil tubing running around the outside of that cylinder. You could either use induction heating to heat the cylinder up to preheat it, or you could actually use compression to preheat the cylinder. Nonetheless, once you get the thing up to operating temperature and the piston's going up and down and that heat's transferring through the tube, when you get to a certain temperature, because it's so hot, it will have flash steam that you can then pipe around back into the intake and use it like a steam engine.
Right.
So, at a certain temperature, though, the compression, and it's already into steam, it's already vaporized, and what's the next step past the vaporization, and you can't, how far can you take steam before you finally get a hydrogen explosion?
Wow.
Go ask them at Fukushima.
Really?
A nuclear power plant, and it's exactly how it played out, was the water level for the cooling went down. It started superheating the steam because it was like, you know, the rods were getting too hot. That superheated steam pressurized the system past its normal levels, and now you got superheated steam being compressed and heat superheated. What happens? You get a separation of oxygen, a separation of hydrogen, and then the next thing you know, boom, you get an explosion. Right. Well, there you go, folks.
Separation of the hydrogen and oxygen, that temperature and pressure of separation is very, very close to its self-ignition point.
That's right.
It's like, what do you call it? You can take propane and compress it so tight it turns into a liquid, but if you continue putting pressure on it and heat, it will self-ignite.
Yep. That's what a diesel engine's been doing for years.
Yeah, exactly. It compresses it so tight, it gets so hot, it self-ignites.
So, that expansion of the fuel, when the fuel's burning, that expansion creates enough pressure to literally push the piston down. And the harder you run it, the better they run. You know, it's amazing. Diesels, that not only do they have a lot of torque, I mean, pulling power. That's why they put diesels in big old tractor trailers and stuff. They got a lot of pulling power.
A lot.
And so, you know, if you take everything you've learned from a diesel engine, combine it with what you know from a combustion engine, and from what you know from induction heating, and from what you know from air compressor technology, heat exchange systems and all that, and you design this from start to finish specifically to run off of water, then that's exactly what it'll run off of. You know that water doesn't like to compress, but gas is a different story. And so when you turn water into steam, what do you have now?
A lot of power.
Yeah, you got a gas. You got... You got something waiting to do. If it has the right conditions to have compression and heat, it will literally self-combust.
You know, gasoline and diesel fuel both are about half the weight of water. But water is 3.7 times more powerful when it's turned into steam than diesel fuel or gasoline when it's burned.
Yeah, but in reality...
So you could carry half the fuel and go twice as far.
But in reality, they're already doing inside the engine exactly what I'm explaining. They're just doing it a different way. They're actually mixing two things together, which is the diesel fuel and the water.
Right.
There's water running through your engines already, people. No matter how hard you try, you can't not suck the atmosphere in from outside. You're going to get moisture in that engine. So, Stephen Gibbons posted a link in there, the Tesla twin turbine combustion engine module. A new type of engine module is described based on the Tesla turbine. Our Tesla twin turbine combustion engine module comprises of two Tesla turbines welded together, forming a combustion chamber in between. The combustion chamber includes air fuel mixture inlet and an ignition inlet. Fuel air mixture is injected through the air fuel inlet into the combustion chamber, which is ignited by an ignition device. The high temperature combustion gases flow in opposite directions across two stacks of evenly spaced smooth parallel disk, transferring energy into rotation. The disk via the mechanism of boundary layer, laminar flow injection. Is that supposed to be linear? I don't know. The pair of rotating stacks of disk rotates a pair of rods. The gas exits through the exhaust hose or openings adjacent to the pair of rods. The rotating rods can be used to drive generators and useful works. Good find there. The Tesla turbine's pretty impressive because the way that it does, it uses the pressure between two flat discs to actually produce rotation. No fins necessary. It basically pressurizes the air in between there, and once you pressurize something, it will literally grab a hold of a smooth surface and push it away. So, we know this now, alright? Well, we can literally build turbines using compressed air and compressed, fuel or exhaust or whatever that would be just as powerful as a regular jet turbine. See what I mean? Have you seen some of the RPMs? Go Google up Tesla turbines and look at some of those. It's amazing. And all they are is a couple discs that are like really close to each other. And you put air pressure in there, and there's only so much space, that pressure will continue to work until it's like literally putting glue in between the two of them. What do you think?
I had a call. I have Mike with me. Sorry about that.
You had a call.
Yeah, I like it. I like it. Cheers, this. I know it can be done.
Well, I'm saying the average Joe, the average shop out there, before you deny it, at least try it. We can engineer perfectly perfectly designed engines out there that will have absolutely no exhaust that is toxic or pollutant. It's just, come on, man. You got to get up and do it. That's all there is to it.
Yeah. You just got to get up and do it. That's all there is to it.
Yep. That's
not
true.
Like that. You're a poet and don't know it.
Yeah. Go out and Google up water injection and look at all the different technologies out there. They're using gas turbine water injections. There's people that are showing you how when you inject water into a cylinder and you guys will listen to the doggone motor RPMs raise up in there. There's DIY water injector videos out there. There's tons and tons of information. It's not new science.
Fuel, fossil fuel did a couple of videos on water injection, and he had actually had a little gasoline generator.
Yeah.
And he did several videos. One he was using gasoline, the other one he was using gasoline fumes, another one he was using gasoline with water, then he was using gasoline fumes with water. And he actually had an electric space heater hooked to it. One of those 1,200 watts or 1,500 watts space heaters, so it would be under a load. And he really ingenious way he put the fuel in. He had a little beaker type thing. The hole was in the bottom, so he put a hose to it, and he would get it running, and then he would fill it up to a particular line on that mark, and the instant it would fill up to that line, he would hit his stopwatch and time it how much gasoline it took to go down, right?
Yeah.
And under load, actually operating that electric heater, and it saved 2 or 3 ounces would have burned up in such a period of time, but then he would put a sonic humidifier by the intake, and never turned the engine off. He just kept adding gasoline to it, you know. And then he would, with the water vapor going into the carburetor, he would fill it up to that line and start stopwatch again, and the thing would run a lot longer, and no difference in the power output.
Yep. Well, B&W is working with direct water injection systems. Of course, their deal is to avoid pre-ignition and to keep the cylinders down to a certain temperature. So they're using some bits of physics in there with that, but I'm saying they could take it farther and actually get it to run off of water, not even use the gasoline period. There's
right.
Other people using water and methanol injections. And methanol, ethanol, any of those, y'all know the how they make all that, right?
Right.
Well, basically turn corn into alcohol. I don't know. You did with donuts. You made some liquor with donuts, so you could burn your donut fuel. And
yeah.
Anyway, simple water injection videos are out there.
I've used donuts, day-old donuts, out of the dumpster behind the donut store. I've used that several times to make alcohol. It works great.
Well, for Ferrari in 1983 used water injection for the F1 racing engines, and BMW is working on ultrasonic water injection.
Right.
So it's out there, man. Dad, burn it. Look, people want to try to say, I don't know what I'm talking about. They want to say there ain't no such thing as free energy. And yet, you're sitting here seeing that a company like BMW, who they're pretty proud of their name brand, is injecting water into high-performance engines. And so why would they do that if it wasn't beneficial?
Right.
They have pre-turbo water injectors, which you know that with a turbo, you're compressing air. So you're not only compressing air, but you're sucking in small amounts of water, and you're basically superheating that and getting it all prepared for once it comes down into the intake manifold. It's not going to cool your cylinder down and cause you to lose combustion. It's going to make the doggone thing run like a striped ape, you know?
Right.
So, it's out there. BMW's doing it, and other companies are doing it, and there's people out there in the hot rod community doing it. Looks like this one video says 2011 Camaro, 1,000 horsepower dyno water methanol injection. Imagine that, 1,000 horsepower by injecting water and methanol into the combustion chamber. Huh.
It definitely increases your horsepower, that's for sure. And it'll increase your gas mileage.
Yep.
Big time. I think I told you I had a 1970 Ford Ranger, back when the Ford Ranger was a full size pickup truck, had a 302 motor in it, V8. And I took the spray nozzle off of one of my first wife's empty perfume bottles, so it puts out an atomized mist, and I hooked it up to my windshield washer and put distilled water in it, because the nozzle was so small, you know, that I was afraid any contaminant in the water would clog it up. So I used distilled water in the windshield washer to actually spray that water down into the carburetor. And I'm going to tell you something, at 45 miles an hour down the highway, you shove your foot to the floor on the gas pedal and hit that water, turn it on, and that sucker would squall roll for almost 100 yards.
That's because you just crammed a lot of power down there.
Oh, Lord, yeah. In fact, it would throw your head back against the back glass. You could not pull your head forward. You couldn't do it.
Well, if anybody out there is listening to this radio show and knows the Mythbusters personally, I'm challenging them. I'm throwing down the gauntlet. Bring it on. Tell me you can't run a car on water. But you're going to have to do it my way. And if you do it my way and it works, then you eat crow.
You know, I want to bring up the Mythbusters deal on the Mentos wheel. They used what Wallace Mentos used, which is propane, because it'll boil at a much lower temperature, right?
Yeah.
But actually, the Mentos wheel, you could actually use water in the thing. It would be twice as powerful because it's twice as heavy as propane. But now it wouldn't work below 50 degrees.
It would with my design. Like that right now, I just come across a video prototype 9000 put out there, a water injection system more advanced. And what he's got going on is the same thing I've been saying. He's using induction heating to literally boil the water before it ever even gets there.
Right.
So if you did the system right, man, if anything, when you park the doggone car, you got a little heater on your fuel tank to keep the water from getting froze.
Right.
But if you got the temperature from start to finish on this thing, you ain't even going to have to worry about that. So, you know, this guy's using induction heating. I'm going to have to, like, click on this deal right quick and see if I can mute the video without pushing it over the air right now. But I'm going to see exactly what he's doing. But he's using an induction heating circuit, like I said. Now imagine induction heating circuit around the cylinder. You can get that cylinder up to operating temperature so fast it ain't even funny. Have you seen any induction heating deals?
Yeah.
So that's the whole key. Bring the temperature up, bring the pressure up, and then you can literally flash that water to steam, and with the compression and the temperature, be able to get ignition, combustion, however you want to say it, whatever terminology you want to use. So, this guy's using an induction heater to do exactly what I said. So the technology's there. So, if you can run your car off of water, which the Mythbusters says you can't. They try to say it's busted, even though they ran it off of hydrogen and nearly blew their intake off the top of the deal. You know, if you're blowing the intake off of there, if you're getting a big, giant flame come up out of the doggone intake, or the carburetor on there, then that tells me you got a lot of power going on.
Yeah,
this is why you wouldn't want to run your car on hydrogen. You might blow yourself up, man. Trying to make y'all look all stupid when in reality they'd had a flashback arrestor on there, that would have never occurred and the car would have run perfectly.
Exactly.
And, you know, for people that are worried about, you know, the hydrogen making too much temperature in the cylinder, well, you can adjust the temperature by the input and by the air-fuel mixture, the oxygen that you put in there. So, you can actually control the temperature of the burn inside the cylinder.
Yep.
And if the engine was designed properly, you would only have heat where you needed heat. You wouldn't have it all over the entire motor, or you wouldn't even have the need for a radiator system any longer, because you're focusing that energy where you want it to go.
Exactly.
It's plain and simple. So this guy is preheating his doggone water with induction. That's pretty cool. So, anyway. Any other thoughts, Raymond?
I don't know. We've covered just about everything, actually.
Yeah, well, when's the auto industry ever going to get around to it?
When somebody gets off their dead duck and actually does it and gets other people to do it, then they'll start doing it because they have no choice. But as long as they're making money and people are paying for it, the automobile industry is going to do it.
Yep, that's the point. So, just think about this. If we build the holy grail of engines that will run directly off of distilled water, and we show everybody else out there how it's possible, and they can actually do this. You can imagine, you could literally run an internal combustion engine to turn anywhere from a 5,000 watt to a 12K generator head, and be able to run your entire doggone house electricity wise off of water.
Yep.
It sounds like a, when you listen to it, because of the way you've been told as far as engineering and all that, it sounds like a tall tale. It sounds like it ain't possible. But if B&W's shooting water into the doggone cylinders, and it's been done by tractor drivers and airplane pilots for years to give them more power, you know the only reason why they don't do that all the time in those specific engines? It's because it pushes out so much power to tear your doggone motor apart.
Yeah, they had that problem in the South Pacific during the Second World War. Our fighter planes, they were all popular then, but they could not run the Japanese planes. So the Japanese plane got on their butt and started following them, shooting at them. They only had one choice, and that was going into a power dive. Well, the Japanese planes, they went in a power dive too. So some mechanic engineer came up with the idea of putting water injection. But they put a lot of water in them to the point that in 8 to 10 seconds, it would actually have so much power that it would blow holes in the pistons the size of a nickel. You would just drop a nickel right through the hole.
Yeah.
Some of them actually lose their heads off the engine itself. But, I mean, you lose an engine on an airplane, but you save a man's life. You know what I mean?
Yep. So you know that that water has a lot of power potential, and you modify them from the get-go. You're engineering them to not need so much water.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
I mean, like even in a gasoline engine, you don't want to put too much gas down a gasoline engine. You get
exactly.
You get bad results. You know? And if you ain't got your air-fuel mixture, you'll either choke out the neighbors or cause the doggone thing to backfire. If you got hot spots in your exhaust, you could cause a flame up there, or even in your doggone manifold, where your exhaust manifold is. Those things get pretty doggone hot.
Well, you know, the young teenage boys, back when I was a teenager, would get nitrous oxide and put it in their engines. And then when I use that water in mine, it outperformed the nitrous oxide.
Yep.
It outperformed the nitrous oxide.
Of course, there's a lot of power in that doggone water.
Yes.
So, engineer the engines from the get-go to run specifically off of water technology, and you got it made.
Exactly.
Stan Myers was able to do it in a dune buggy in the 1970s, and so if he can do it then, we can do it now. This is the year 2017. How many years is it from 79 to present?
79 would be 21, and 17 would be 38.
So 38 years ago this guy was doing it. So I shouldn't have to repeat myself.
Really? 38 years.
And we should be so much farther advanced right now as far as the way automobiles run. I mean, literally, you can take doggone electric cars and you can outrun in the internal combustion engine with an electric car.
You know, think about Charles Nelson Poe from Winnipeg, Canada, back in 1935. He built a carburetor that did run the engine off of fumes. You could accelerate it, slow it down, whatever. And it burnt nothing but gasoline fumes. He installed his carburetor on just a standard engine. 1934 Ford Coupe was tested by Ford Motor Company in Winnipeg. It was tested by Bren Motor Company and an independent laboratory. The lowest one got 109 miles to the gallon. Another company got 113 miles to the gallon. And another one actually hit 119 miles to the gallon. The first company that got 107 admitted they were bucking a 30-mile-an-hour wind. The carburetor never got to be mass manufactured. After the test, within 30 days after those three tests came out, Charles Nelson Poe and his entire bloodline family disappeared off the face of the earth.
Don't surprise me now.
Yeah. Well, it was in 1953, I believe it was, Michael Fish designed a carburetor that would burn any combustible liquid and drive an automobile. The only thing is you could not mix the liquid. It would run on paint thinner, lacquer thinner, gasoline, kerosene, coal oil, you name it. Any liquid that would burn, and it was self-adjusting. It was put to manufacture from 1953 to 1956. In 1956, there wasn't a single, it was called the M1 carburetor, Michael Fish, M1 carburetor. And by 1956, you couldn't find one anywhere. Somebody went around and bought all of them up, even went to junkyards and bought them to where the junk cars were junk. They totally disappeared off the face of the earth. Think about that.
Stephen Gibbons posted a link in the chat room to a PDF file that I suggest if you want to see it, you go over there to ShazizRadio.com, superchat.html, and click on the link. It's a patent from November 7th, 1967. It's an internal combustion engine plant where they used waste heat and stuff to... Do amazing things. It says this invention relates to a combination of liquid-cooled internal combustion engine with a steam generator and a turbine, which improves the efficiency of transformation of heat energy of fuel into mechanical or electrical energy.
I like Stephen Gibbs.
So he's brilliant. He finds all kinds of goodies, man.
Yes, he does.
But instead of using this doggone engine to basically turn a generator head like you would think, you know, connected directly to it, it's using the doggone heat off of the exhaust, and it shows in this diagram anywhere from 300 to 900 degrees Fahrenheit going on inside this chamber, which basically has some pipes that goes around to basically get your flash steam like a regular boiler system. So they're using the exhaust to turn the water into steam, putting it into a tank, which in turn goes down and runs a turbine, and then runs gears and runs a generator.
Right.
So I ain't as stupid as I look after all, man.
Love it.
Oh, thanks, Steven. I love that guy, man. I'll tell you what,
he finds the coolest stuff.
Well, I put a star on that one on my little bookmark thing because I want to check that out again. That's pretty cool. But the technology's out there, folks. It's been out there. It's been out there forever and a day. And when you go to the gas station and you're complaining about fuel prices, think about why your fuel prices are the way they are. Think about the industries that built your car to begin with. And think about ways, even though you're not mechanically inclined yourself, somebody in your neighborhood is. Somebody in your neighborhood could build a fuel vaporizer. Somebody in your neighborhood could literally redesign an engine. Somebody in your neighborhood has a machine shop. Somebody in your neighborhood's good with drafting and running CAD programs and electrical and circuitry. And if you all decided you really wanted to do it, you could gather together and you could pull your resources together and you could start building engines that you could swap out your old junky engine and use it for spare parts and then put in a better engine that would do exactly what we're talking about. And as long as you ain't out there trying to sell it, you won't have to fight with the patent industry.
Right.
So just build them, put them in your cars, utilize them, build your home generating systems with them. And don't ask Mr. Big Man Government for permission. Just do it. It's as simple as that. You know, I sit here, I look at tons and tons of videos, I research all kinds of different things regarding mechanical and engineering and electrical, and I'm sitting there seeing all the answers, every single piece of the puzzle is on the table. You need that cylinder to be able to get up to operating temperature, so there's two ways that you can do that, actually probably more than that, but two simple ways. One is you run it like an air compressor for a while until you raise the cylinder temperature up to operating temperature. Or if you want to speed the process up, you use a little bit of electricity and an induction heating circuit. So anything that's within that coil will literally begin to get hot rapidly from the magnetic field inside there. And so not only can you circulate the water through this coil, at the same time you'll be heating the water up. Normally, they would be using this process to cool down the induction coil so that it don't get too hot and tear itself up. But you're going to use this to preheat your fuel before it ever even gets to the part where you're atomizing it and then vaporizing it and then injecting it into your water cylinders. Or basically your pistons inside your cylinder. So, it's a real simple concept. Using proven science, available technology, get the people in your neighborhood to gather together and build you an inventor's club or whatever, and get together and build it. It's that simple. And once everybody else in the world sees that you never stop at the gas station anymore, and they ask you why, then you can share that knowledge with them. Well, you know, I got tired of paying the fuel company, so me and a bunch of friends got together and we designed this engine that this crazy old mad science guy kept talking about, and hey, ironically enough, it worked. What do you think? So, if you can push a car down the road with it, you can turn a generator head with it. And if you utilize any waste heat that you could potentially get off of it, You could heat your house with it. They used to do it back in the old days. They still do to the modern day. Nowadays, you got big old school buses that are really poorly insulated, and even in 0 degrees temperature, the heater will get so hot inside there to run you up out of there. You have to open your window in the middle of winter time so you don't suffocate inside the bus because it's too hot.
Right.
So, and basically they circulate water from that engine, and that engine's running at about 220 degrees even in the winter time. And so they circulate that antifreeze all the way down the length of that bus through three different heater cores. Got fans on there, and those two or three heater cores are blowing away and heating inside that bus. So take a little bit of knowledge that you get from that old school bus. Build your house with the same kind of system in it. You don't even have to run a gasoline engine. Just get you a water boiler and boil water and firewood or whatever, and use that water to heat your house instead of the regular heat that you get off a wood stove.
Right.
Or do both.
Yeah.
Leave the door wide open and heat the outside like your grandpa used to holler about. Man, because you can afford it now. You're doing it more efficiently. I honestly don't know what more to say, man.
Really?
I think I've over and over and over again proven, beyond a shadow of doubt, energy's free. Now, we can mince words. You got to buy the equipment. That's obvious. Nothing's for free as far as merchandise or equipment. You got to pay for it. But once you got it paid for, it's an investment. Just like a solar panel set, it's an investment. It's like a wind turbine. It's an investment. Later on down the line, when you're not paying the money to the man, instead you're using the money for upkeeps and other things, going out and buying yourself a soda or, you know, snack or something like that, or going to the movies with the money you would have gave to the electric company.
Right.
Oh, imagine that. I'm a jerk, man.
Oh, Lord.
If I was the power company, I'd hate me. But right now, the power company ain't even afeared of me right now, because the simple fact is they know the average Joe ain't going to take my advice.
Right.
They're not going to do it until they're forced to do it, because it's too easy to walk over and turn the light switch on.
Hey, right.
As long as somebody else is doing it for me, I'm willing to pay a 300 or 400 or maybe 500% markup on energy that should have been free. Don't matter. And when you got presidents of the United States, like when Obama said that he was going to bankrupt the doggone coal industry, or under my plan, your electric bill will necessarily skyrocket. Are you serious? You going to punish the average Joe for a bogus claim such as carbon emissions out there and make the average Joe have to take the majority of all the money they make off of working hard to pay an electric bill? That ain't no president. That's a terrorist.
Yep.
I said it. B.O. was a terrorist. Did I say it loud enough? Going to bankrupt the coal industry. Those guys need a job, man. Hey, if you're worried about cruddy emissions, then make them run better. Like Raymond said, they used to run the doggone diesel engines off of coal dust.
Yep, that's how it was designed in the first place. It was designed to burn coal dust.
Even in the waste on an internal combustion engine, you have fuel. More fuel comes out the back. Run another engine, and then run another one after that. Run it until you can't run another engine. That way you got perfectly clean exhaust, because you already burned up all the fuel before it ever even gets out to the last one. Dad, burn it.
Yeah, I like that, Dad, burn it.
You know that little boxing monkey I told you about on the stick?
Yep.
I got to find me one. If you guys ever happen to be out there and you see one of those little boxing monkeys on a stick where you pull the strings and his little fists go in and out like that.
Yeah.
I want one. Because that's me, man. Pulling my strings, I got my little fist going out there.
You're a good boy.
Anyway, the fuel industry doesn't like me. The auto industry doesn't like me. NASA definitely doesn't like me. And most of the folks out there in the science community don't like me. Even some folks in the alternative energy community don't like me. That's all right. I don't care. I'm right, though. You can run a car off of water, and if you can't, it's because you didn't pay attention in science and you're not doing it properly. Water is, and I repeat, and I emphasize, and I say it loudly, water is 2 parts hydrogen, 1 part oxygen. Separate the two and light a match and see how you fare, man. Okay? Of course.
I've said over and over again, you know, the scientists and the engineers say it takes more energy to separate the water into hydrogen and oxygen than you get back when you burn it. Well, I say don't burn it.
Don't have to burn it.
You can separate water into hydrogen oxygen and get power from it.
That's right.
I mean, it's a gas. It's lighter than water. It floats. It goes up in a bubble.
Bingo. And you, Raymond, you just hit the biggest key of all. When you vaporize water into steam, you get pressure. When you separate hydrogen and oxygen, you get more pressure.
Right. And electricity doesn't care how much pressure there is in the water, it'll still separate the water.
Yep.
So you put your Joe cell that separates the water into hydrogen oxygen, you put it 100 feet under the water, you put it a bucket over top of it, you hold the bucket until it's filled with hydrogen and oxygen, now you turn the bucket loose and it comes up with a vengeance.
Well, I made a ridiculous mistake when I built my first hydrogen cell. I put a valve on it because I didn't want the doggone hydrogen to escape into the atmosphere until I got a chance to burn it. Well, approximately less than a minute or two into the process, it built up so much pressure inside that doggone hydrogen cell. Guess what? It blew up.
Uh-huh.
It blew the top right off of it.
Now, hydrogen and oxygen mixed together in the right proportions, which that's what it would be, under great pressure, will self-ignite.
Yeah.
Be careful about making it under pressure. However, it will take a lot of pressure for it to self-ignite. It will withstand 250-300 PSI without self-igniting.
But you get the temperature up there along with the pressure, and that decreases how much pressure it necessary for it to actually self-combust.
Well, you know, it's just like, okay, you build a water wheel. You put it on by a waterfall, and the water filling the buckets makes it heavier on one side than the other, and on the other side, the buckets are upside down, right?
They take
the same pinwheel, water wheel, and put it underwater. Now you put your Joe cell under it, and the buckets that are upside down fill up with hydrogen and nitrogen, and it turns the wheel.
Yep. Mike in the chat room said the Model T got 30 miles to the gallon. There's some cars today that don't get that good.
That's exactly right.
Oh, man. See, that's why I love these people when they come over to the chat room. They find the information's out there. It's amazing.
My father told Pete that when he was a kid, they took an old Model 8 Ford and they put two fuel lines to the carburetor. One was gasoline, and it was really small, like 1 gallon can. And the other one, you know, the regular gas tank, for 15 gallons, they fill it up with kerosene. And what they do is take a piece of cardboard or wood or whatever and cover a little bit over half the radiator, start the engine up on gasoline, let it run until it got really hot, then they switch it over to kerosene and drive down the road.
Yep.
I mean, there's all kinds of things you can do, man. I mean, just it's not new. None of what we're talking about is new. It was done 50-100 years ago.
Yeah, and all we're really talking about with all this stuff right here is the proper and efficient usage of energy that you're moving from point A to point B and getting work done in between. It's as simple as that.
The thing is, like everybody talking about electric cars. The first electric car built and patented was in 1887. That's over 110 years ago.
Well, see,
and
even
we're still building on electric cars. Why?
Even using hybrid technology. If you built a water engine that would run, would burn water, and you was using that to turn the 12,000 watt generator head that in turn was turning four hub motors. Could you imagine how fast that car could go? The land speed record for an electric car was 245 miles an hour using nickel cadmium battery packs. And I don't know if they've ever anybody's ever beat it or not, but they weren't putting energy back in. Imagine if you had a water motor that was turning a 10,000 or 12,000 kilovolt generator head and basically putting juice back to that system on the fly. Number one, your batteries wouldn't go out very fast because you'd still be putting more energy to the system than is necessary to run those motors. I think, if anything, they would have set fire to the motors before they would have ran out of energy.
You know, I've got a generator out of my shop right now that it's rated at 20,000 watts.
See? There you go, man.
At 850 RPMs.
So you got a little gasoline engine running the doggone 20,000 watt generator head, which in turn is running four hub motors, and now you got to figure out a way to get rid of some of that doggone power, otherwise you'd overload the system. So you build you these neat looking space age lightning guns on the side and shoot lightning bolts down the road as you're going.
Right.
What do you think, man?
Man.
All right, well, that pretty much wraps it up, doggone it. I hate it this time. This is like the end of the Mad Science Show, but we're running the hair over while we're trying to get up out of here. But all I'm saying to everybody out there, the technologies exist. You've got the vast sum of all man's knowledge, like my friend Simply Steve always says, at your fingertips. We're standing at a crossroads right now. We can either let the environmentalists complain and protest all their the next 20 years or more against the oil industry and the power companies and all that kind of stuff, or we can try to get some of them on board to actually manufacture what it is that is already available to us. If you don't want to run it on water, then don't run it on water. Run it on coal. Just do it in such a doggone manner where your emissions are zero, because you're running it, you got a complete and efficient burn every single time. These folks put spark plug igniters in their exhaust system so that they can light up the waste fuel coming out of the exhaust and make these cool flames out the back. So that tells you right there and then that your exhaust is flammable. If you can smell the gasoline out your lawnmower, then chances are it's not burning all the gasoline in your combustion cycle. You see what I mean?
Yep.
So, before I get out of here, which I'm running a little bit over here, Stephen Ginn's posted in there, when Henry Ford told a New York Times reporter that ethyl alcohol was the fuel of the future in 1925... he was expressing an opinion that was widely shared in the automotive industry. The fuel of the future is going to come from fruit like sumac. Is that say sumac? Yeah, maybe it does. Out by the road, or from apples, weeds, sawdust, almost anything, he said. There is fuel in every bit of vegetable matter that can be fermented. There's enough alcohol in 1 year's yield of acre of potatoes to drive the machinery necessary to cultivate the fields for 100 years. Ford recognized the utility of the hemp plant. He constructed a car of resin stiffened hemp fibers and even ran the car on ethanol made from hemp. Ford knew that hemp could produce vast economic resources if widely cultivated. So you can run your car on hemp, you can run your car on gasoline, you can run your car on coal, you can run your car on gasified wood gasifiers, you can run it on steam, and you can run it on water.
And you can run it on propane, methane, all kinds of stuff. I mean, the world makes methane gas naturally.
Yep.
I mean, anything that is organic, if you put it underwater and let it decay underwater, it makes methane gas.
Yep. Well, look.
Just put it underwater. Dried leaves that you rake up in your yard in the fall, put them underwater.
Anything.
The swamp, which I was born and raised right next door to the Dismal Swamp in Virginia. And we'd be out there fishing, and next thing you know, these bubbles would come up out of the water, you know, from the bottom. All it was the leaves and crud blowing off the trees into the water. They get waterlogged, sent to the bottom, and decay.
Yep. Anything.
You go to almost any swampy area and take your, go to shallow water, and not to where you take your paddle or your oar and go down in the water and punch it into the mud at the bottom, and all of a sudden gas bubbles will come up, and it's just pure methane gas.
Yep. Anything that you atomize
runs beautifully on methane gas.
Yep. Anything that you atomize or vaporize and pressurize and raise the temperature up will burn.
Yes, it will.
So the world is fuel. You're surrounded by a sea of free energy. And if you can't find free energy, you're simply not looking hard enough for it. And if you're out there trying to tell me how stupid I am because I pointed it out that, yeah, you can, and it is, electricity is free if you got the equipment to do so. The power company does it. They got huge hydroelectric dams, man. They're not paying for that water moving down through there, are they?
Nope.
But they're charging you for it. All right, everybody, you've been listening to Mad Science. Peace and love. Take care. Stay tuned for the Knights of the Round Table. Same time, same bat channel, and all that kind of jazz. So, let's get our dream team together. Peace and love, everybody. Yeah. Take care.
Folks, got one thing to say. When life gives you crap, make fertilizer.
Yeah, and methane for fuel.
Yes.
A twofer.
Oh, hey, that's beautiful. When you take the crap, you put it under water, it makes methane gas, and what's left is liquid fertilizer.
Yeah. All right, so we're telling you how you can burn your trash and do it cleanly.
That's root trash, isn't it?
Yep.
All right. Take crap and turn it into fuel.
All right, peace.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch.